Kansas anymore.
That's right, Toto. That's right.
Where are we?
Well, sun is out in Galway.
So are we.
So are we. Exactly. We're in the Caves in Salt Hill, which has just recently opened. And I feel this is going to be our new home.
It's very nice. I'm liking it so far, I must say.
Mm-hmm.
Some nice dark wood, little table lamps. You can't go wrong with a little table lamp, Sherita.
And a couple of boxes of USA biscuits.
And you're set.
Up on the wall. Yeah, that's all you need.
That's all you need today. Yeah. So we're liking the Caves.
We've got raspberry tea in our hands.
Just taste their raspberry tea. Make sure it's up to scratch.
Okay.
Hmm.
I like that.
We might have to taste a lot more. Find the one that really does it for us.
I'll just order a taxi, so.
Okay.
So, you're very welcome.
Thank you, and thank you for having me here, Sherita. It's really truly an honour. I think I'm one of the few repeat guests of the show.
Yes, indeed.
I'm like Alec Baldwin doing just SNL.
Like Hotel California, I can check you out, but you will never leave.
Yeah, it's good. I'm looking forward to today's episode.
I am. So much. So for those of you who don't know, you're listening to Docs That Rock, which is a weekly podcast in which we review documentaries. And this week, we're going to be covering the 2019 Confessions with the Killer, the Ted Bundy tapes.
Yes, the Ted Bundy tapes. And you know, Sherita, because we've spoken about this before, I am not an automatic fan of anything that involves episodes of the documentary series, as it were. But in this particular instance, I like it.
Do you really?
Mm-hmm.
I do. They did kind of chapterize it up a little bit. Like, you know, every episode was kind of like storied out a little bit. You know, it was very cleverly written.
Yeah, you know, when I first heard about it, I was very meh about it because I've watched a lot on Ted Bundy and true crime in general, but I've watched a lot on Ted Bundy. So I thought, oh, what are they going to, how can they tell this in a new way, or how can this be different? And of course, they have the tapes so that you get to hear his voice, and that's what makes this a very compelling series.
One of the most, by the way, complete spoiler alert for the entire episode, right? One of the things that struck me as being particularly insidious about this was how we were constantly reminded, and when you hear him speaking, you see him interacting with particularly the court and the courtroom scenes,
mm-hmm.
and you're like, ah, yeah, he's a nice guy, you know, I bring him out for a dance now if I met him in a disco,
mm-hmm.
and you kind of wonder how many people you've known in your life that present as charming as that, who are absolute psychopaths.
Oh, I could name some, but I won't on air.
I think that's the banality of evil is the whole thing behind this. It's just like he just presents as being so charming. Into such the new content of the tapes, hearing his voice, saying the things he's saying. The pictures, some of the pictures are quite harrowing, what happened to these women. The insidious way that it occurred, I know.
Yeah, but a lot of that isn't new, you know. It's been shown before.
Yeah.
But the voice, hearing his voice.
Yeah.
And hearing their story about how they got him to talk, about all of that, the journey, with their perspective on meeting him, their perspective on having normal conversations, quote-unquote, with him, and then trying to figure a way to get him to talk, and then suddenly the eureka moment, and they discovered, well, how about we get him to talk about himself in the third person? I thought that was brilliant.
So Stephen McCand and Hugh Ainsworth were the guys who were responsible for this kind of approach, and immediately, within minutes of being presented with the tape recorder, he picked it up and cradled it like it was a child, and then started telling his story, which is just disgusting to me.
Thought it was fascinating.
Oh, yeah, it is fascinating, but it's also equally disgusting, just like Ted Bundy. I found what was very interesting in this documentary for me was, like what you've seen with the Golden State Killer recently, the talk about, you know, the importance of interagency work, like all the different police stations from the different areas and different states working together, like when they weren't sure whether he was responsible for the Seattle crimes or the Utah crimes, or you know, the kind of way, like. And I thought that was very interesting, because of course they didn't do it back in those days, but this was the case that changed all that.
Really, his case changed how police operated across the United States, and how detectives and different police departments shared information on cases, because that had not happened prior to this. And it was interesting because obviously he's super smart, and that's not in question. So he knew that that was the case. All he had to do was pick up, go across the state line.
It was scary.
Do whatever he wanted.
And the set pieces of, like, where his hunting grounds, like Taylor Mountain, and like the lake, please forgive me if I mispronounce this, Lake Sinamish.
Yeah, that's not bad, not bad.
What is it?
Something like that.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
You wouldn't say it yourself.
Sharita, yeah, oh, no, wouldn't
no.
make that mistake on a podcast.
Why would I do that?
Why would anyone do that?
You know, that kind of notion of, I remember, it's only now that I realise that scene in Silence of the Lambs, where he asks your one to kind of help him. Oh, I've broken my arm.
Oh, yeah. Did
yeah.
you? Okay. No, yeah. I knew that.
Because
I
kind of, like, I'd heard about it as a thing that serial killers do. But I didn't realise it was him that did it first,
yes,
you know.
He was the one.
And it was like, I broke my arm. I can't load in this. Can you, small 16-year-old girl, help me load this TV into the back of this van? And, oh, God, it was just so creepy. And everything about that as well, like, that he was trying to, he didn't know how to be himself. It was almost like he was impersonating somebody else, the car that he got, the degree that he did, the ex-girlfriend that, like, kind of tortured him, you know, all that kind of stuff. It was just, he was disgusting. It's just,
well, you know, I'm segueing slightly into a different topic, but whilst it occurs to me, you know, the fake broken arm, the cast, all of that business, and luring women into his car. There was a book many, many years ago, I think I've told you about it before, and the author's name escapes me, but it's called The Gift of Fear. And it's written by a guy who does personal protection for high-level corporate executives down to anyone who's been stalked. And he shared his wisdom in this book, and Oprah had it on her book club years ago. And that's how I had heard about it, and I read it. And there's a chapter in that devoted to, almost the whole chapter, to women being alone in car parks or on an empty street, and someone approaches you, and it's 99.9% a man is approaching a woman and she's alone. And he said, you listen to your gift of fear, you listen to your senses saying, get away from me. And you have two choices. You can either say, oh, no, don't be silly, I'm overreacting, I'm being paranoid, they have a broken arm, I better help them. Or the flip side is you offend someone genuine in a car park, or you could actually save your life or save yourself from an attack. So he said, always go with the offending the person. He said, anyone who approaches someone like that in a dark parking lot is up to no good, or else they're an idiot. So, you know, risk offending them. Don't get in the elevator with somebody who gives you the creeps. You know, do all of that. And we do dismiss our sense, you know, we dismiss those
of
thoughts.
Of course you do, yeah.
Because you don't want to look,
I mean,
paranoid.
If you look at My Favorite Murder, you know, I mean, it's the
yes.
whole, it's like the whole chapter in their new book, How to Stay Sexy and Not Get Murdered, is like devoted as well to the, like, I was trying to be polite. And like you just said, you know, I mean, I've been in situations like that before where you're like, I really don't want to do this, but I don't want to come across as being rude. But really, since I've started listening to that podcast, it's like I'm flat out, like, banging the door, people not answering the door to anyone who's telling me how to, you know, do anything. It's like, I'm in my house now. No one's going to be ringing my doorbell. Good luck, you know. And that kind of
I
stuff.
Always do that. I never answer.
Oh, no.
Well, since New York as well. But even moving back to Ireland, and everybody is so, you know, doors are open. People just drop by. Like, people don't do that to me anymore. All my friends learned quite quickly. She's not going to open the door unless she's expecting you.
No, and you should never do that. Like.
Never.
Never.
But also, may I just say...
Oh, did I open the door in 2013 or something? I thought you were going to give out to me.
Yes, and I'm holding on to that. No, and may I just say, My Favourite Murder damn them for having the best tagline in the world.
I know.
It is, amazing. Isn't it?
Mm. I just love them.
Damn them.
I have no animosity towards Karen and Georgina at all, and if they want to come on our podcast or if they want us to go on theirs, I'm absolutely cool with that.
Well, we could be the Irish experts for any Irish-related activities.
Murder activities, true
crime. Well, this is the Irish perspective. Sergeant O'Flaherty. We'll decipher all of that.
Yeah. That's so funny. Oh. Hi, Mimi. I mean, what other stuff kind of struck you about this documentary? There's so much in it, like.
There's so much in it, but it's very, very well done. And of course, we can't go any further in this episode without mentioning the movie.
Oh, yeah. Zac Efron, right? Scary dude. Very good at his job.
He is great. And actually, he deserves a lot of... because it can't play it... You have to play it a certain way for it to come across as... And he looks like him, so that could be very easy for him as an actor to just rely on that and do very little otherwise, but he does so much.
I actually don't think that... they look similar, but not alike. I think that he embodies him so much that you can almost smell Ted Bundy off him. Like, he does such a good job.
I think he looks quite like him, but in certain photos.
The film, extremely wicked and...
Shockingly evil and vile.
It wasn't exactly what I thought it was going to be, but it was a very interesting perspective, and it did exactly what it's, you know, what it didn't make any false promises. It delivered on what it was going to deliver.
I didn't think it was going to be like that at all. I thought it would be very gore heavy and explicit and told from with a lot of victims' families coming in, and it wasn't any of that at all.
I had expected at least some gore considering who you're dealing with, but I thought they kind of partly humanized him to one extent, which is dangerous, but at the same time it's from her perspective, and it has that, is he really this person, you know, that kind of way. And Liz, by the way, is the her that I just referred to there. So it's a very different way for looking at the news story. And I thought that for someone, by the way, it's directed by the same guy, Joe Berlinger. He directs both this documentary series, Confessions with the Killer, Ted Bundy Tapes, and he also directs Shockingly, Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile.
And I love how the title came about as well.
Because the judge had said
the
it.
The judge addressed him as in exactly those terms when he was sentencing him.
Did it strike you when you were watching, first of all, Ted Bundy, the tapes, like the documentary, and then the feature film, the amount of white male privilege that it takes for someone to be able to pull off the absolute farce that was that courtroom?
See, I see it, I don't think that's the reason at all. I think he's a total psychopath, and I think the traits that come along with that, he could be from anywhere. He could, you know, obviously that plays into it, but I really think it's more about the mind of a psychopath. No matter, he just believed that he could convince everybody of everything, because why would they not believe him? Because he knew, he thought he could control, he'd gotten away with taking so many lives in such a violent manner. He really believed that he could get away with anything.
Smarter than everyone else in
the room. The smartest guy on the planet. Everyone else is fool.
Isn't that the same thing?
No, I don't.
As white male privilege.
No, that's
thinking you're the smartest guy.
That's psychopathic behavior.
Isn't that the same thing?
What's your point? So anyway, Ted and his psychopathic behavior.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to say there is, like, I am partly joking about, you know, being a psychopath is synonymous with white male privilege, but look at people that were serial killers that were active at the time, right? You've got John Wayne Gacy, you've got Charlie Manson, you've got the Hillside Strangler, you've got the Son of Sam. That's crazy.
But I don't have the stats in front of me, but I mean, there's a very, very high percentage of white serial killers.
Oh yeah, of course there is. Yeah. Of course there is. But a lot of that is not because it's because they're in situations where they can take advantage of their murderous wants and needs.
Perhaps.
Who's going to suspect the rich white guy who presents
but
affluent?
But remember as well that it was a different time, and
yeah, it's not gonna...
yeah, and now you would think. I know myself, if I were in a dark parking lot, I wouldn't care if a Brad Pitt lookalike approached me I was any man within my space that I didn't have a clear exit and there were lots of other people around, I would be very New York about it and get the hell out of there. So I wouldn't judge anyone in particular. Even if it was an aggressive looking woman, I would be out of there so fast.
That woman looks very aggressive. What if that's prejudice against resting bitch face women?
Oh yeah, see, this is it, the gift of fear, Sherita.
Eileen Warnos, God help her, she had terrible life. It's very sad.
I heard a serial killer expert whose name I don't remember, but we'd have to look it up and put it in later. He was in Dublin and he was on Dermot and Dave on Today FM, and he was talking about his career, and he interviews serial killers. So he had interviewed Ted Bundy and he had interviewed Eileen Wuornos, and he spoke about them separately, but he said that with Eileen Wuornos, he actually felt for her. They had a proper conversation. She had a story. He said that it was a completely different meeting.
She was a sociopath. There was a difference.
But he said Ted Bundy, they said, well, how did you think of him? And he said, he is pure evil. Pure evil.
And I really believe that. You look at Joe Berling's work, across the slate, we'll say, of the documentary series and then the feature film, to be able to look at the content from a different angle, both in the way he did the documentary and the feature film, like the black eyes, the just, I said it earlier on, the banality of evil. And they're so complementary, the two. If you watch one, watch the other. It's just so terrifying. It's actually flat out terrifying. I know at least one person that I would not be surprised.
Well, a lot of them are functioning. They reckon that you can choose to be your CEO, or you can choose to be, you can use your powers for good or for evil. And there's a high psychopathic factor in a lot of CEOs.
They go high on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. They do indeed.
What did you think about the Chi Omega slaughter?
Oh, I know. It was just heartbreaking. And, talk about it. I hate to use the phrase because it's so obvious, but overkill.
You know, he had just escaped twice.
Oh, I know.
Like, he just thought he could do it. What?
I know. And as much of it as he wanted in a very short period of time.
But this was ultimately how he was caught.
Yes. The bite marks.
The bite marks. I wonder, isn't that fascinating? Because that was the first time that they used bite marks as well.
I know.
Yeah. As forensic evidence.
It was interesting to see that play out.
Yeah.
And also the first televised court trial.
Do you know what I find ultimately fascinating about the fight between good and evil, or true crime as we call it these days? The whole thing about the new and inventive ways that we have to catch somebody who's done something. Even like 30 years ago, like the Golden State Killer, or at this time, Ted Bundy could have factored everything in, but he never would have factored that they were going to hold him down and they were going to threaten to hold him down, but eventually he did it willingly because he didn't know where it was going. Why are they taking him?
No, and his ego, and he was so ego driven, he would have thought, I don't care what your evidence is, I'm going to refute it.
Yeah, yeah.
Bring it on.
And he did refute that.
I know.
He said, no, I had a chip in my tooth on whatever date.
It couldn't have been me.
Because I didn't have that chip in my tooth on the day that this murder occurred.
But then fast forward and you see ridiculous court scenes like the O.J. Simpson's trial with the leather glove. And if it doesn't fit, you must acquit. Johnny Cochran argument. And the leather had shrunk, so of course it got wet and it wouldn't have fit on his hand. And that worked. So court theatrics.
There's a lot of things that worked.
Could have worked.
It could have. There was never, the first use of television.
Yes, and what a use of television. For someone who looked like that.
Proposing to his girlfriend on the stand. I mean, turning around and firing his... Well, it wasn't as dramatic as it was in the film, but basically firing his counsel and then electing himself as being the counsel. The relationship with the judge...
That was very interesting.
That was fascinating. It was like a father-son type of job that was going on.
And very well done in the movie.
Yeah, well, John Malkovich.
He was amazing. I thought he was just fabulous.
It's amazing. If he was to read out the time, I would be so convicted to listen to him. What time is John Malkovich? it's 12:52, and you're going, oh my god, oh my god, just the name. It's true, yeah, though, isn't it?
He was great. I just thought he was just so good. He's always good, but he was great as the judge.
I absolutely wanted to strangle that judge alive myself when I saw it, and in the documentary series, like, when I saw him there, you're quite a nice young man, and if you had chosen to take a different path, I'm here going, like, are you for real? Like, did you not see what he did to all these women? Do you not see what he did when he escaped? You know, do you recognise the efforts of all the police that had to work together to try and get him just into this room, and you're here giving him a compliment, being polite to him?
But he did, because he did say that he was extremely wicked, shocking, evil and vile. So he saw all the evidence, and he sat through the whole trial. But he was so charming. Yeah, and I mean, that's such an insult to the victims and their families as well.
I think maybe it was par for the course in those days, though, when it was... Do you know that maybe it was just something that would have happened? Even today, sadly.
And he was right as well in terms of that he threw away what could have been a great career. Because he would have had all the help because of... You know, his background and...
Why can't you just be a normal psychopath that end up running the company or running the country? Dead.
Oh, or a continent, perchance, perhaps.
Oh, I don't know what you're alluding to. Come on.
I definitely think watch it. Put the time aside. It's worth it for this series.
Women of the world and men of the world need to be aware of the shockingly... Whatever it is.
Extremely wicked, shockingly evil... and vile.
Every time I go to make an attempt to say it, Tracy just like puts on her phone where she has it written, ready to go. Like, and I've been watching how quickly she's been doing it. Like, it's quite impressive. Yes, indeed, he is
extremely wicked, shockingly evil, and vile.
That's right. If you like this, then you're also going to like 101 different things. Mm. First of all, Anne Rule wrote a book called The Stranger Beside Me. It is fascinating. Have a read of that. She talks about how she literally was an ex-police detective, I think.
Yes, and I think a starter journalist. And it's a true story about how Ted Bundy was her friend.
She was working beside him on the suicide hotline. Mm-hmm. And she had no idea that he was...
extremely wicked, shockingly evil, and vile.
So, also, it's been covered by My Favourite Murder that did a great episode on it. It's really, if you want to know more about Ted Bundy, I have to say at this point as well, Zac Efron, don't underestimate him. He is a fantastic actor, so... if you need to chill out after watching this, just watch all the High School Musicals, the karaoke versions, and sing along.
And feel better. And then, I mean, it's hard to recommend anything because there's so many different serial killer shows out there, specials and everything else. And I wonder what the next one will be, because this is a trend and it's ongoing. Who would you like to see a profile of?
Honestly, your man... Graham Dwyer. I know his case is under appeal, but an Irish murderer, not a serial killer as far as we know. He's been convicted of the murder of Elaine O'Hara. There's a case file broadcast on it if you want to find out more about it. And I'd like to see more about that story because I found it particularly... It was like roadkill. I just couldn't stop listening to the trial and hear it. Yeah. Now, he has appealed it on very interesting grounds as well, so maybe check out that story if you're interested in true crime, because it's very, very interesting.
Well, I think the next big one, but it won't come out for a while because it's still under investigation, will be the up-to-date information on the Golden State Killer.
Oh, obviously!
But even his, you know, we know very, very little about...
He's not talking.
...the last... Yeah. You know, a few decades, and that's what I would like to hear. And people will start to come forward, and there will be more stories, and it will be unfolding.
Yeah.
But that's the one I can't wait for.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's this time last year, it was sleepless nights catching up on that particular case. It was just the fact that he did what he did over decades. And just if you are a serial killer and you haven't been caught yet, well, you better watch out, because like... technology is
well
getting
yes
up there now.
Ancestry DNA is coming for you.
Oh, that too. Yeah. Have you done that test?
No.
Would you do that test?
Probably.
They wouldn't tell you, I don't think, if you were related to a serial killer or somebody that had DNA in crime.
No, they'd only come after you if there's an investigation and an investigator traces everything back and finds you. That's
yeah,
the only
I think it's a really good idea to do it. There are issues there because if they can use your DNA to catch criminals and such, you're kind of wondering what else could they use your DNA for.
Yeah,
you know?
But I wouldn't mind having mine on file. I have nothing to hide.
You can't hide anything anyway. Like, we're touching glasses and we're losing hair follicles and we're drinking out of Coke cans.
They're not documenting it and putting it into a central ancestry database to check for familial DNA.
I'm pretty confident my family is fairly solid.
Okay.
I don't know about yours.
I don't know either. Maybe I should stay away from it.
I'm totally joking. I'm sorry.
Oh, and I forgot to ask you at the top of the show there, Sherida, about how your week was or if you went anywhere interesting during the week.
Yes, actually. As a matter of fact, I did. Yes. No. I believe that you were in Carlo, was it?
Oh my God, Sherida, did I not mention that I went to the Cannes Film Festival?
On behalf of Docs That Rock.
I went to the Cannes Film Festival and I visited the documentary corner, which is a huge area, not just a corner, in the main marché. And it was fantastic, really impressive. Didn't see Brad or Leo, and George didn't make it this year. But otherwise, it was a great trip. Really interesting to see the frenzy that is the festival. It's just so huge. It's a massive beast. And even to see the red carpet and the photographers. Yeah.
I watched Game of Thrones finale at 2:00 in the morning on Sunday. So, yeah.
Did you? I can't wait to see that and see what happens. Not watching the rest of the series, but I watched the finale of the last series.
I can't wait for you to... Do you know what? See if you can guess.
What, Sherida? What?
See if you can guess what happened.
Oh, I know, yeah. Watch the finale. It'll be easy. It's fairly straightforward, isn't it?
Yes, of course.
Oh,
nothing complicated about it at all.
I bet I can guess. It's like any kind of soap opera, or I'll be able to tell
the
interrelationships.
Yeah. Mm.
Oh, great. Okay, well, we'll have a nice conversation about that then.
Oh, we absolutely will. I can't wait. And so, Cannes is done.
Cannes is over for this year. Yeah, but it was fantastic. Their
Going Arts Festival launch.
Yes.
And we also have the Film Fla launch.
Film Fla launch is coming up fast.
The Galway Film Fla is...
Which means festival.
Yeah, it's
Galway
great
festival.
European Film Festival. It's one of the key ones that you would go to.
International Film Festival, actually. It's its title.
We're so busy at the minute.
I know, it's good to be busy. And
Kilt with the busy.
Kilt with the busy we are, drinking raspberry tea. And I think that's it for this week. What do you think?
Just one last thing. I'd like to thank Conor Brennan for the theme tune.
Love it.
And that's it, really. Thanks for listening.
It's a goodbye from me.
And it's a goodbye from me.
Goodbye.